Are there. Now it's time for Czech Books, in which David Vaughan describes the work of the 20th century poet and writer Richard Wagner.
A very warm welcome again to Czech Books, and we're going to be talking today about a Czech writer of the first half of the 20th century, Richard Wagner, who was immensely influential on his generation of writers, and yet today is little read, little known outside the Czech Republic, and even within the Czech Republic, he is not one of the household names among writers of the period of the so-called First Republic. But this neglect is very much undeserved, and one person who's been trying to draw attention to Richard Wagner is Martin Tharp, and I'm joined now by Martin. So Martin, what made you interested in this almost forgotten First Republic Czech writer, Richard Wagner?
I would first say that he's not almost forgotten, but that he's definitely a kind of minority taste. He was officially neglected during the years of normalization. Not that they disapproved of him for anything that he wrote. He wasn't in any way a programmatic anti-communist or even had much of a definite political position most of the time. However, they did disapprove of him simply for being Jewish, cosmopolitan, and modernist.
And that was enough to be going against the grain of socialist realism of virtually the whole period of the post-war.
That's true, and at the same time, I think it's not even so much a question of communist ideology, but that he went so much against even a kind of Czech national self-conception. For one thing, he was very closely tied to artistic life within Paris, where he lived as the Lidové noviny correspondent throughout the 1920s up until the end of the 1930s.
I think this is an important point to make, isn't it, that he was a Czech writer, but that he spent most of his active life and career outside the country.
That's true, mostly in Paris. And what's also interesting is, at the time when Czech literature and art looked towards Paris for its chief inspiration, he was actually there, and he knew people. Every time that a new book by Proust would come out, he would review it in Lidové noviny for that very week, even before it was translated. At the same time, though, he was writing his own literary work, which is really what his reputation stands, even though his journalism is, of course, when today it makes such absolutely wonderful reading that you don't want to pick up a newspaper.
I think this would be a nice opportunity to hear you reading a short extract from maybe some of his journalistic work from Paris in the 1920s.
Just to put it in perspective, this was published in a daily newspaper of the pre-war period, so. In a single life, the average person reads many a stupid book, sees countless bad theatre productions, and hears endless hours of poor music, and so often trembles in convulsions before all sorts of colour imprints, that likewise he sees films that are foolish, falsely comic, falsely tragic. Indeed, so many types of tastelessness and idiocy saturate our lives. Let this be taken as fully valid coinage. If, though, one meets with the most stupid of stupidities, that knows whereof it is, and nonetheless hopes to amuse one, the reaction is to rise up in indignation against such a suggestion. For there is, for me, nothing more unbearable than when a fool has the daring to take me for a greater one. As far back as my memory can reach, I cannot remember having met with greater idiocy than now exists in the cinema. And that it precisely transpired in cinematography pains me, since up to now I've held it in esteem.
So we can see there that he was an outspoken critic.
Very definitely. But at the same time as this, his own writing, both in prose and in poetry, is very different. He started off as a poet. And I should add, though he was from a Jewish family, much like that of Kafka, he was not from Prague, but from the provincial town of Písek in South Bohemia, an area where almost exclusively Czech was spoken, even though he was, by and large, bilingual in German. Secondly, when he started off as a poet before World War I, Most of his poetry was fairly lyrical and romantic, celebrating the strength of nature, and that all lasted up until he was mobilised. First in 1913 to Bosnia, then part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and then again after the attack in Sarajevo, he was sent back to the front. He suffered a nervous breakdown, was invalided out of service, and during that time he wrote what I would consider to be his first truly mature work. It is a series of stories from his experience in the war, the horror of modern trench warfare. And after that, also in the immediate post-war years, he completed his second volume of short stories called Shkleb, or The Grimace, which is, in my view, probably one of the finest things that he wrote. And after that, he stopped. He stopped with creative work altogether, went to Paris, wrote his pieces for Lidové Noviny, and didn't seem to want to do anything more than that.
This changed when Weiner introduced his friend, the Czech painter Josef Šíma, to some of his French artist and writer acquaintances, most importantly René Daumal and Roger Gilbert Lecomte, who were both interested in the ideas of the Surrealists, but at the same time had doubts about the Marxist and anti-religious tone of André Breton's Surrealism. Unlike Breton, they felt that they could reach other poetic realms, not just through the dream, but even through mysticism or religious ecstasy. This encounter led to the emergence of the group called Le Grand Jeu, the Big Game. From the start, Weiner played an important role in the group, in the process falling in love with the much younger Lecomte. The encounter was to influence his literary career.
He also returned to writing poetry, and eventually to his last volume of prose. But the one thing to remember is that after his two final prose volumes, he increasingly suffered from stomach trouble. It actually turned out to be cancer of the stomach. And in 1936, he left Paris, returned to Prague, moved in with his sister, and within a year, he was dead, almost as if he knew what was coming.
As somebody of Jewish origin, he would have been unlikely to have survived the Holocaust in Prague.
Yes, that's true.
I think the time has come for another extract from maybe one of his stories. What have you chosen here for us?
I have chosen one called The Voice in the Telephone, and it is from the volume Shkleb, The Grimace. I should begin by explaining the plot of it. It is the story of a man who refers to himself as a hermit of the metropolis, solitary confirmed bachelor, who one day, sitting in his usual chair in the cafe, is called to the telephone. And a mysterious female voice on the telephone says to him, "I'm in love with you, but I can't reveal who I am." In fact, throughout the story, he never finds out who this person is. This is from the middle of the story.
And given that it's a dialogue, you're going to be reading it together with Rachel Mikosh.
"This joke has gone a bit stale. I know that the unknown woman was you."
"Is that what you believe?"
"More than believe, no."
"Then all that I can do now is to disappear forever, for you have betrayed me."
"I betrayed you?"
"Yes. For you do not believe the only thing that is reality, the word."
"You promised me a sign. Now give it."
"I have given you countless signs for you to believe that I am who I am."
"I never noticed one of them, and asked you in vain for a sign that was apparent. In addition, I have no doubts that you are who you are." After a pause, she spoke.
"This is no time for jesting. Was it not I who started this fermentation in your mind? Was I not the cause of it, when upon that one day you noticed how long the path may be towards others, yet for all that a path of which you had never known before? Was I not the cause of it, when you began to notice with much closer attention things diminutive and subordinate, Who else but I whipped up within you that desire? And the question of whether you are indeed attractive to women, and why, then, do you persist along that course that leads nowhere, unless it is to death?
That was an extract from Richard Wagner's The Voice in the Telephone. And, Martin, there's a very distinct quality of Kafka in this writing. There is a clear similarity, isn't there?
I would say very definitely it's similar to Kafka. But at the same time, you could also find so many other references in this, because he bore so much of the world of Habsburg Vienna within himself, and at the same time was able to touch upon equally the world of French modernism, of the great importance of the dream and the unconscious and the unknowable. The way that he was able within his life to bring these two elements together really does mark him out as a kind of genius of the 20th century. But at the same time, he really is, because of it, outside of even the main currents of Czech modernism, which were too young to be called up for military service missions, born around 1900, and they simply saw the New World, the post-war order, as a kind of ecstatic liberation, which Wagner never did. He never could have. And of course, for that reason, their ecstatic liberation included an enchantment with Marxism, and later, in the cases of many of them, they turned into complete cultural functionaries after the communist coup, a form of mental coarseness which Wagner never had, which made him perhaps more influential for dissident literary life in the 70s and 80s, that he was, to an extent, rediscovered during that time as someone who did not succumb to these siren songs of modernity.
And he has never been translated into English.
That's something I've always found strange, that no one has yet taken him up, possibly because his own command of Czech is very unusual. He had a great love for archaic forms of grammar, even deliberate archaisms of style that at the time that he wrote must have sounded more than a bit strange or backwards.
And you've taken up the challenge of translating some of his work.
I've done so, I think, because he really is a kind of European mind that brings in the experience of trench warfare in Serbia, of cafes of a provincial capital of the Habsburg Empire, and a close connection with the Parisian avant-garde, as well as just the fact that his stories are just so enjoyable to read at the end of the day.
Martin, thank you very much indeed.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.